Hi, my name is Stephen Jones, and you might know me from the Eger Project. This is episode 20 of the Modules Unraveled podcast.
Welcome to the Modules Unraveled podcast, where the Drupal community speaks. And now, your host. One of his life goals is to be his own boss, Brian Lewis.
Welcome to the Modules Unraveled podcast. My name is Brian Lewis, and today I am talking with Stephen Jones. Stephen is a longtime Drupal contributor and one of the current maintainers of the Eger project, which is what we're talking about today. Stephen, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Great. Do you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and where you're from?
Sure. I live and work in the UK. I'm a mathematics graduate from Warwick University, which makes me a master of mathematics, which sounds very grand. Basically just means I like maths. I work for a company called Computer Minds in the UK. We're a small company that have 9 employees in a couple of offices in the UK.
Great. How did you get started with Drupal?
Yeah, so sort of coming back to university, I was involved in a math society that needed a new website. So I looked for a CMS and sort of evaluated various options that were out there and kind of looked at a few different things. I actually looked at Drupal and just was incredibly complicated and not something I particularly wanted to kind of dive into. So moved and started looking at Joomla. And Joomla was sort of much more easy to get going with and kind of was prettier and had all the sort of usability stuff, at least for the sort of initial sort of thing going with, sort of sorted. And but then I sort of actually got down to doing things with it and found that it was a bit of a pain. And at that point, I tried Drupal again, and in the meantime, Drupal 4.7 had been released, and that was way better than what I tried before. Mm. So then I started using Drupal and hadn't looked back. So that's sort of got started with it.
Cool. So what are some recent projects you've been working on?
There's quite a few projects that I'm involved with. I can't talk about quite a lot of them because we tend to do sort of subcontracting work, so we're not the kind of end or the sort of people who are talking, interfacing directly with,
right,
with whose website it is. But generally, sort of the things I get involved with are sort of migrations from old systems to new systems, or taking over or sort of handling the more back end parts of things. So looking at things like single sign-on or integrating with other databases to make those sort of websites function.
Okay, cool. Well, let's go ahead and get started with talking about Eger. And personally, I've heard of Eger and I've heard that it's really good, but I haven't actually used it myself. Can you kind of explain what it is exactly?
Yeah, so Eger is a Drupal-based hosting management system. It's probably the most succinct, possibly least useful explanation of what it is. In sort of simple terms, it's a tool that will manage your web server and your database server so that they will be capable of hosting a Drupal site. And it will allow you to operate on the level of, I want a new Drupal site at a particular URL installed with the following settings, and you hit a button and it will give you a new database, it will set up virtual hosts in your web server, it will configure all of that for you, it will install the Drupal site for you and basically give you a link that you can then click on, and there's your site. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what Eger is. It's sort of split into a front end and a back end system. So the front end system is kind of what most people see and what the sort of pretty pictures of Eger are that there are about, and or what they're of, sorry. And it's just a Drupal 6 site and some custom modules and a pretty theme. And all that does is kind of allows you to manage websites as if you were managing content. So in the same way that you would create a blog post, you just create a website. Or in the same way that you would create an item of news on your website, you create a new platform of code, we call it, a new kind of code base of Drupal that you can tell Agar about. And that front end then feeds into the back end. The back end is the other major component of Agar, and that's a series of Drush extensions, and they just sit and they sort of process tasks as they're given to it. So the front end has a sort of queuing system, and the back end will ask the front end, are there any items in the queue you want me to run? And as it gets them, it will start running the items in the queue. So if you ask it to make you a new site, it will pick that task up and it will run that task in the back end to actually create you a site. There's actually a pretty clean separation between the front end and the back end. So the back end is actually able to be operated independently from the front end.
Okay, so it's built on Drush then?
Yeah, it's pretty much a massive Drush extension with a sort of website, just sort of layer, a thin layer of website on the top. Huh. It's sort of more Drush than website, certainly. And actually, the back end is technically the sort of primary store of the data, and it just sort of gets pulled into the front end when it needs it.
So. I haven't used this yet, so please forgive me. But so, like, when you install a site, it runs the site install Drush script with your database and everything in there, or is it different from that?
You can think of it like that. Actually, the back end, which is called Provision, the Provision actually predates the Drush site install command.
Oh, okay.
So we've actually got our own implementation of a Drupal installer that can install things. One of the long-term goals is to use more of the Drush stuff that's come along. But yeah, basically, we're just kind of executing the right Drush commands at the right points to do the right things. That's kind of what it does.
Cool. Okay, well, how did you get started with Agar?
Yeah, so I kind of got into it in the way that sort of, I guess, most people get into open source stuff, which is I was just using it. I'd seen it at DrupalCon. That was like the first time I saw Agar. Hmm. I think it was DrupalCon Washington. And one of the maintainers of Agar was demoing one of the new early versions of Agar that was a kind of ground up rewrite with this new front end back end separation. And it sort of what it could do and what it was promising was amazing. And kind of I was managing a few Drupal sites, and the kind of upgrading Drupal sites when a new version of Drupal Core came out, you'd have to upgrade all the code. And if the upgrade didn't work when you ran the sort of database updates part of that, if that didn't work, then you'd have to roll back, and it was all sort of a bit scary and stressful. Mm-hmm. And Agar was promising at that point to kind of take all of that stress away. Which was really attractive, so I looked into using it for a few of our sites when I started working at Computer Minds, and we actually started hosting sort of our own Computer Minds website with Agar and a few other sort of internal sites with Agar, just to kind of get a feel for it and see sort of what it could do and what the shortcomings were and where it saved us time and that sort of thing. And gradually just got more and more into it. And then as we needed more features, so one of the first features I wrote was the ability to have it just back up a site on a schedule. So I wrote a little module that just kind of waits for a certain amount of time and then just goes, oh, right, this site hasn't been backed up in a day, I'll just add another task to back that site up. So I kind of got into writing the extensions for Aga, which obviously necessitated knowing quite a lot about the internals of Aga. And that got me into kind of how complex and confusing some of it was and how poorly documented quite a lot of it was. And so I really wanted to help out with the documentation. So I basically approached the Aga maintainers saying I'd really like to write documentation for it, and started submitting patches. And after a certain amount of patches and them being happy, they just kind of said, hey, have commit access. I have since kind of gotten a lot more into it, and I do a lot more than just write documentation for Aga now. But that's kind of how I got started. It sort of filled a hole and, satisfied a need. Cool. Yes.
What kind of things can Aga do other than like installing sites? Because that's mostly what I've heard it do before. What other kind of functionality does it have?
Okay, so the main thing that Aga does apart from installing sites is migrating sites. And a migrate of a site is moving. Aga has a different view of a Drupal website to what sort of most people think of when they think of a Drupal website. So most people, when they think of a Drupal website, would think of the full Drupal code base with Drupal core in there, with your contributed modules, maybe running a custom distribution, so something like Open Atrium or that sort of thing. Whereas in fact, what your site actually is just effectively your database and the files, images that people upload, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And also kind of the site obviously needs to know, well, I am running on Open Atrium, an Open Atrium code base or just Drupal core. So when Aga says a site, Aga really just means the database and the files and other sort of very site specific settings. It doesn't, when Aga means a site, it doesn't mean the entire Drupal code base. So when we talk about migrating a site within Aga, all we're talking about is just moving it from one set of code to another set of code. Now, that could be just a different physical location on a disk, on a server. I'm not sure why you'd do that, but you could do that. Mm-hmm. It could be from, say, Drupal 7.12 to Drupal 7.14. It could be from a sort of set of code that's just Drupal core to a set of code that is, say, Open Atrium, or a set of code that has additional modules that you need, that sort of thing. The migrate process is the big sort of the big win for Aga, really. It allows you to very safely do this site migration, do the site upgrade. The Aga migration is probably what most people would call an upgrade, and we could probably just rename that in Aga ourselves the hassle. But it is technically a migrating, moving it from one place to another. And what it will do, it will look to see if there are database updates to run, sort of the normal Drupal. You go to update.php and you run updates and you click all the buttons and you hope that it all works. And if it all works, you're happy. And if it doesn't, then you have a very stressful few hours. Aga will run those for you. And if there is a problem, then it will automatically roll back to the previous state of your site. Which just means that it kind of takes all of the stress out of doing releases on your sites. It takes all the stress out of, will this work? Won't it work? I'm crossing my fingers. You just kind of, you still have that, but you don't necessarily care whether it doesn't work, because if it doesn't work, you just tweak some code and you do it again. And the site is offline for a very, very little amount of time.
Huh. Okay. While you were talking, I thought about the whole migrating and everything. So how does that integrate with Git?
Right. So in some ways, Aga doesn't necessarily care whether your code is in Git or not. In some ways it does. It's quite a hard question. The whole kind of the workflow is quite interesting and is kind of like an open question of exactly how you can use tools like Git and Aegir together to host a Drupal site. It's kind of up to you how you want to use it, and there are different approaches you can take. The way that we would kind of recommend it is that you would use Git for putting your custom code for your site or your contributor modules. You might want to put those in your Git repository, or you might even want to put your entire Drupal code base into one big monolithic Git repository. And Aegir is totally fine with that. The one bit that then you don't put into your Git repository is the files and the database of your site and like the sort of settings.php kind of files for those people who like those sort of things. Those wouldn't go in Git. They would just be managed by Aegir. And then you'd have a separate backup that would keep a backup of those things. But what would go in Git would be effectively just the code that's needed to run that site, but not necessarily the database. The analogy that one of the other Aegir maintainers uses is that the things you would put in Git are a bit like an application, and then each site is just a running instance of that application. And so there's nothing to stop you running that single application multiple times, i.e. having the same site available at multiple, sorry, not the same site, different sites available at different URLs, but running off of the same Drupal code, using the same version of views, using the same version of your custom module that you've coded. But they are actually available at different URLs and completely distinct Drupal sites, but just all run within the same kind of Drupal code base.
Okay.
So in terms of how does it integrate with Git, it, out of the box, it doesn't actually do anything with Git. It has no sort of magical tools for doing things with Git. There are a few people who are working on integration with Git, so that you can commit from like the Aegir front end. Instead of kicking off a backup task, you would kick off a Git commit task or a Git pull task, and it would execute the corresponding Git commands in the right place and pull in the latest code or commit the latest code and push it and that sort of thing. So it's kind of, because Aegir is based on Drush, it's very extensible. So if people want to integrate it with Git, then they're kind of free to do that.
Okay, cool. So what sort of people is Aegir appropriate for?
Sure. This is a good question. Aegir is kind of suitable for anyone who hosts their own Drupal site. And by host their own, I mean specifically people who have something better than just shared hosting. So something better than just FTPing files up. You need control of your own machine. So typically that would be a virtual private server or VPS, which you can get for, you know, $10 a month or something. They're pretty cheap these days, right the way up to kind of, you know, Amazon is effectively just that, but on a bigger scale. Amazon EC2 is that on a bigger scale. And Aegir can happily run on sort of that level of hosting or better. So you can run it on a dedicated machine if you want, but you don't need to. You basically need root level access to the machine is the sort of technical term, I guess, or someone with root level access who is happy for Aegir to kind of be in control of stuff.
Okay.
So that's the kind of basic requirement that you need. It's pretty simple to get set up with. Recently we've added, I say recently, but like within the last 2 years, we've added Debian packaging for Aegir. So people who are familiar with running apt-get install MySQL or something like that, you can run on our community site. We have a list of install instructions, and you run a few commands to add our repository, and then you can just run apt-get install Aegir, and it will run and it will install Aegir on a Debian-based machine and that's kind of it for the install. You then just log front end and start using it. So it's pretty simple to get sort of going with. It's currently kind of, as far as I'm aware, is the only solution that is going to help you host, say, hundreds or thousands of sort of cookie cutter sites sort of easily without a lot of hassle. So for example, I know of a, I think there's a guy, I think he's in Australia. I might have made that up, but anyway, there's a guy who does like a wedding website. So if you're getting married, you can sign up on this service and they'll give you a website that is your own, that it has lots of features that you'd want when you're planning a wedding or having a wedding. And in the background, your sign up goes through to Aga, and Aga spins you up a new site and gives you that site. And obviously, he is hoping, I imagine, that he'll have thousands of people using that. So he's going to have thousands of sites all being managed by Aga. And it just takes the hassle out of setting up virtual hosts, creating databases, and doing kind of mass operations with all of those sites. So if you are in the position of having hundreds or thousands of sites and you need to migrate them from Drupal 7.12 to Drupal 7.14, then you can do that in sort of three or four clicks, and then it's not that hard.
So with that wedding site, does he have it set up so that he doesn't have to even touch it? They just kind of fill in their information and Aga does it all for him?
I believe so. We internally have a system that or a service that someone will sign up to, and they'll fill in a form, and that will get sent to someone, and then they will fill out the form in Aga and actually create them the site, and then they send back the link. And you know, it's all of this is scriptable, so you can automate it, but you don't necessarily always want to automate it. In our sort of particular scenario, we actually want the person in there doing stuff, but there's no reason why you can't automate it. So he may have automated it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Whether he has, but yeah, it just makes it easy. Even if you just have one site, it just makes that upgrading process a lot easier and a lot less stressful. It's also useful for people who do continuous integration. So if you are continuously updating, if you have a sort of staging or a development version of your site centrally that you are constantly updating with the latest code and you want to make sure that it's all good, then Aga is scriptable, so you can effectively drive Aga through Drush. And one of the other Aga maintainers, MIG5, has actually written a few blog posts about exactly how you would do that and has scripts for doing exactly that.
Okay. So how does Aga compare to tools like Pantheon and Acquia's DevCloud?
Yeah, so we get this question quite a lot, and it's a really good question. Basically, if... Pantheon and Acquia DevCloud are kind of like one-stop shops for Drupal hosting. They're trying to be a kind of big, all-encompassing, single sort of point of, or single provider of a Drupal hosting solution, which is really good. If that's what you want, if that's what you need, then that's brilliant. If you just want to hand all of that over to someone else, then that's really good. But if you can't, or if you don't want to, so if you have to host the site internally, say on your servers in your data center, then obviously you can't use those solutions. Or if you don't like their development flow that they are kind of almost kind of imposing on you, it is probably the best practice, and we would probably encourage that as well in Aga. But if you want to use some other development workflow, then it's not always easy to sort of work within a solution like that. But with Aga, you can run it on your own hardware. You can change the code. It's open source, so you can actually see how it's working. You can make changes. You can you know, like as I did, you can get involved by writing new features that aren't there and contribute them back, and then get more knowledge in other areas of AGA and kind of extend it in other ways and integrate it in ways that, that you perhaps can't with other sort of tools that are out there. It is more work to get started. Obviously, with services like Pantheon or DevCloud, you just go and sign up, and that's pretty much as difficult as it gets. They've kind of set it all up for you. With AGA, we do have pretty comprehensive instructions, but it is more effort. So if you are looking for the sort of easiest way to get going with things, then AGA is perhaps not the place to go. And then finally, I guess just AGA has less support because there's no sort of company behind AGA in particular, there's sort of several companies who have sort of vested interests in AGA, but there's no kind of company you can go to and say, fix my problems, right. Or I'll stop paying you sort of thing. But equally it's free. So, you know, it's the kind of swings and roundabouts between the kind of, you know, open tool that you've used yourself or going off and getting a service to do it for you. There are one of the companies behind AGA, Qumbit, I forget how to pronounce it, have their own AGA-based hosting service that's kind of like a sort of Pantheon or DevCloud-y type service. So you just go to them and you sign up and you pay so much a month and you get a Drupal hosting system, but it's based in AGA. So there are people using that. But yeah, that's the sort of major differences between Pantheon and DevCloud and AGA.
Okay. What about tools like Puppet and Capistrano?
Sure. So, there's been a really, really good move in the sort of general IT industry to having tools that manage other tools and make things easier for you. And the whole kind of DevOps kind of movement has been growing and is really cool. So tools like Puppet that manage servers for you are amazing. I'd say that AGA is like built from the ground up for Drupal. Obviously, it's using Drupal, but it's a specific tool for Drupal. So rather than having to get these other tools to kind of bend to doing things in the Drupal way or kind of teaching them how to manage a Drupal site, AGA's kind of already done that and is already there. And, you know, we can run the database updates on your site because it's just a Drush command. It's really easy to call for us. But with these other tools, it might be that they actually need to make sure the Drush is installed. If it's not installed, then they need to install it, and then they need to actually talk to the site, and then they need to run the updates. And it's kind of, it could be a lot of work to get that kind of going. AGA is also really, really easy to extend for a Drupal developer, for someone who their sort of bread and butter is developing Drupal sites, writing modules, maybe sort of writing Drush stuff, and is not kind of, they're a bit uncomfortable with other tools that aren't necessarily PHP, for example. So because AGA is just PHP and is just Drupal and Drush, it is very, very easy to extend. You can write Drush extensions, you can write modules, and you can make AGA do some really interesting things. But AGA isn't what you'd probably call a full lifecycle management tool, like Puppet is. So Puppet will manage things like installing Apache and installing MySQL and making sure that MySQL is running, making sure that Apache is running with the right user, things like that. AGA doesn't do that. AGA sort of manages those tools, but it's not going to go and install those tools for you. And it kind of shouldn't. It is just about managing Drupal. So it will install Drupal for you, but it won't start installing Apache and things. So the way that I sort of see them fitting together is that you would use a tool like Puppet or Capistrano to provision AGA, to install AGA, to tell AGA about the various servers that you have in your systems, and then you would use AGA to actually install Drupal. Or you may use Puppet to tell Eager to install those things, but you would still be using Eager sort of for what it's there for.
Okay, so a little bit ago, you said that it has less support than Pantheon or Equus DevCloud, but are there places that people can go to get some support?
Yeah, so there's quite a few places. So we have our own community site. Eager has kind of some unique needs in terms of like a project, a website, that aren't really satisfied on Drupal.org. So because we are a collection of Drupal modules and Drush extensions, there isn't particularly a single place on Drupal.org that kind of encompasses all of that at the moment. So in a similar way to there is an openatrium.com that has stuff about OpenAtrium, there is a community.agerproject.org that has news, it has a discussion forum where you can ask questions, and it has a handbook that is just about Eager and has lots of useful information about installing Eager and then using Eager and the various extensions that other people have written. We document sort of exactly how we release Eager, or how we sort of interact with the Eager community and sort of weird meta discussions like that. And that's a really good place to just go and ask for help or find help. We were trying to sort of direct people to the FAQ that's there as a sort of first port of call, and then kind of just post a question and ask. We also have a IRC channel, #Eager, on Freenode, and there's generally kind of a few people in there. You may not get an answer, or you may get an answer. Obviously, it depends who's around, or if that all sort of fails, you can post an issue in one of the issue queues for Eager on Drupal.org, and yeah, they're there. There's sort of generally a pretty active community of people more than willing to give help to people.
Okay. What do you see as the future of Eager? Where is it going?
Yeah, good question. It's kind of, Eager's a bit funny in that Eager for a long time was in a kind of a beta and alpha phase, and was just getting its features sorted and making things work, and then would suddenly decide to completely refactor how the entirety of the back end worked and would change everything under the hood. And then we got to version 1, and version 1 was stable, and we've kind of slowly been improving version 1. And version 2 was kind of like, oh, we'll redo the Eager front end in Drupal 7. We will support Drush 5. We will do all of these big, grand features. And it kind of didn't happen. There were several sort of abortive attempts by myself to port the front end to Drupal 7. But it turns out that Eager is insanely complicated in the front end. It does an awful lot of stuff, and it tends to do it in a way that it is sort of from the Drupal 4.7, Drupal 5 era, in the way that it stores its data and that sort of thing. So it's actually moving the front end to Drupal 7 is quite a massive, massive challenge. So recently what we've decided to do, and what we sort of settled on, is that the sort of near term future of Eager is that we get support for Drush 5, which is pretty much there. We're waiting on some upstream issues in Drush itself to get fixed. And then once those are fixed, then we'll be able to be in a position to release Eager 2, which will have Drush 5 support. There's a few other things on the roadmap for Eager 2 that may or may not make it in. We will still have a Drupal 6 front end, which is totally fine. There are plenty of Drupal 6 sites out in the world, and they are really, really good. And Drupal 6 is amazingly stable and is a brilliant, brilliant product. And there's no reason why that should be a bad thing or should hold us back. And the plan to kind of get version 2 that will be stable for a long time. is the plan. And then when that's kind of sorted and we're happy with Drush 5 and the other sort of minor features of Aga 2, then at that point we will start working on Aga 3, which will either be a port to Drupal 7 for the front end or a port to Drupal 8 for the front end, which we'll probably attempt kind of before Drupal 8 is out, so that when Drupal 8 is out, we'll be able to release Aga 3 with Drupal 8 front end and, you know, lots of bells and whistles and all singing or dancing. So whether that will happen is another matter. Hmm. At the point at which Drupal 8 comes out, obviously Drupal 6 will possibly become unsupported if it sort of follows how it's been going before. So at that point, the Aga front end would technically be unsupported, which is obviously not a good position to be in. But kind of with the limited resources that we have of an open source project, this is kind of where we find ourselves. If people want to come along and sort of drop a port of Aga to Drupal 7 in our laps, then we'll happily release Aga with Drupal 7 in the front end. It's worth pointing out at this point, a lot of people are probably thinking that Aga can't manage Drupal 7 sites, or that you can't install a Drupal 7 site with Aga. That's totally not what that means. Aga can handle installing Drupal 7 sites, hosting Drupal 7 sites. It's literally just the sort of the point and click interface that you use that is Aga. That at the moment is in Drupal 6, but you can install a Drupal 7 site through that. It's just talking about getting that into Drupal 7 or beyond. So.
Okay.
There's kind of
Sorry.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, I didn't realize that. So you can actually install Drupal 7 using Aga 6.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, in theory, with minor tweaks, you will actually be able to install Drupal 8 as well when we have the Drush 5 support fully working. So yeah, you can install Drupal 5, 6, or 7 using Aga. Today that works. It's literally just the website that is managing those sites effectively is in Drupal 6.
Okay.
That probably should go right at the top of the show.
Okay. Cool. Was there anything else you started to say that I'm going to cut you off?
No, that's fine. I think it's just kind of the future of Aga is kind of like all open source projects, and that it's what people want it to be. And that if there's something that we don't do that you need us to do, or that you need Aga to do, then come along and talk to us, and we can see what we can do.
Okay, cool. Well, we had a couple of questions from Twitter, although one of them turns out not to be an issue, and the other you just answered. So I'll go ahead and ask them anyways, just so they can get credit. But and I'm going to butcher this name, but Vitaly Blinovsvov, or Time Raider, on Twitter, asked, what are the plans for a 7.x release and new Drush support? And we kind of just went over that, so...
Complicated, I think.
do you have a timeline on when, like, the Drush 5 support will be in Aga?
Yeah, so definitely by DrupalCon Munich is our kind of, like... If we miss that deadline, then... we've kind of failed in some sense. But in reality, it is pretty much good to go. As I say, we're just waiting on some upstream issues in Drush. So as soon as there's a Drush 5.2 release, then we should be able to have an Aga release that is actually sort of usable and working. We will have to drop Drupal 5 support at that point for like installing Drupal 5 sites and that sort of thing. So,
okay.
And we need to work out how people actually install Aga 2 compared to Aga 1 and the upgrade path. And there's sort of some minor sticking points that we need to get over. So it's not incredibly simple, but sort of within the next few months would be my hope for that.
Okay. And then Tony Groff, or T. Groff on Twitter, asked, what should distributions do to ensure Aga compatibility? And he originally asked this because he was having an issue with Panoply, I think, but... that turned out to be an issue with apps, but I thought it was still a good question in general. Do distributions work with Aga, or how do they work together?
Yeah, so distributions are just a sort of a fancy term for having different install profiles in Drupal. So most people, if they just install Drupal core, and certainly in 7, will get the option between the standard install profile and the minimal install profile. If you install a distribution, then you'll get an extra option. It'll say Panoply or OpenAtrium or something like that, and Eiger supports that completely. What you won't get is if those distributions define any custom forms that you have to fill in as you go through the installation process, you won't get those in Eiger because it won't be able to pull them through into the front end. But yeah, Eiger can install OpenAtrium. In fact, one of our tests that we run is installing an OpenAtrium site on Eiger, so you will definitely be able to install OpenAtrium at least.
Okay. Great. I think that wraps up everything about Eiger. So let's wrap up the show, and I ask all my guests these same questions. First, what are you most excited about that you've noticed lately?
Yeah, there's so many things. It's quite ridiculous. I'm one of these people who are just sort of generally interested by most things. So this is quite a hard question to boil down to kind of one or two things. So I've gone for two things.
Okay.
One is that with Drupal 8, what we're seeing is that Drupal's kind of growing up and sort of being part of PHP becoming more modern, so using the Symfony 2 framework and kind of introducing more object-oriented code where it makes sense, and having configuration stored on disk instead of just sort of scattered all over the database. It's just really, really interesting and really cool to see Drupal becoming much more grown up and kind of moving it from kind of a sort of slightly dodgy, where is my configuration and how is this all working and scary sort of PHP application into something that really could be the sort of de facto CMS. This is how you do PHP content management systems. It's really, really cool to see that coming along. Also, I wanted to pick out the Drupal.org improvements that are coming along at the moment. So in like the last year or so, there have been lots of big and incremental improvements as well. So things like Git was sort of just over a year ago, was just a massive change and is really cool. Things like inserting images into posts is really cool. And there's kind of more and more of that coming, and it's really good to see that as a community we are actually improving our website and improving the tools that we use and acknowledging where there's weaknesses and kind of really getting together as a community to solve those problems. It's really cool and really exciting to kind of be part of that and to sort of see that unfold as well.
Cool. Okay, so where can people find out more about you and your projects?
Sure. So I usually go by the name Stephen Jones on Drupal.org and Drupal-related things. I have a slightly geeky handle on Twitter from sort of when I was about 12 or 13 or something. actually Darth Stephen on Twitter and IRC, but I tried to go by Stephen Jones.
Okay, cool. Well, Stephen, it was good to talk with you about Eiger, and I definitely learned a lot. So I'll be excited to kind of try this out myself.
Cool.
Thanks for coming on again. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
All right. Before we go, there's just a bit of housekeeping that I need to take care of. A couple weeks ago, I had Jay Ian Green on the show to talk about his new book, The Drupal 7 Views Cookbook, and I convinced him to let me give away a free copy. And as it turns out, I'm the winner. So yay for me. Okay, maybe not. Paul Del Signor is our winner, and he tweeted, "I am sure that a copy of the Drupal 7 Views cookbook would help put more organic, wholesome food on the table for my starving kids. Smiley face." I thought that was pretty funny and liked that he went with the whole cookbook theme. So congratulations, Paul. Your copy's on the way. And the last thing is that I just released a new video series on modulesunraveled.com. It unravels the simple news module. So if you've ever had issues setting up a newsletter on a Drupal 7 site or have clients that want a newsletter feature, go buy the series and save yourselves hours and hours of time. Believe me, this one took a lot longer than I expected, so it's totally worth the $30. And to make things even a little sweeter, you could use the coupon code MUP020 and get it for half off right now. That's MUP for Modules Unraveled Podcast 020 because this is episode 20. So yeah, you'll get over 19 videos, and I'll actually be adding a couple more in the future. But right now, that's over an hour of video and written training for $15 with the coupon code MUP020. So go get it now. Okay, that's all for this episode. So I'll see you on Twitter, and we'll be back next week with a new episode. We'll be right back.